Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, March the 28th, 88th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from the California Highway Patrol, Arcata Swamp Division, Chase Adams. Hey, guy.
Glad to be here.
Oh, I know. Everybody says that, but do you really mean it?
Sometimes.
Yeah, okay, fine.
This is one of the times I actually mean it.
So what do you want to talk about today?
Oh, let's talk about a little bit about DUI.
All right. I would imagine that's drugs.
Well, it can be...
Or just driving in general?
Driving under the influence, driving while intoxicated.
Okay, we'll talk about influencing agents.
Let's do it.
All right, why don't we come back?
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chase Adams, but before we do, we'll hear from Niles Bohr with our quote this afternoon. The opposite of a Craig statement is a false statement. The opposite of a profound truth might well be another profound truth.
Okay, my mind just got officially blown.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah, it's a good thing that you have weekends off.
Yes. Yes, very good.
And recover from all these powerful thoughts that you run into during the week.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When we say someone is driving under the influence, I know there's a legal black and white hardcore definition.
Yes.
However, I would think that there's also a more interpretive definition.
Well, let's
that
break.
You guys and gals work with. As
sure.
This is somebody who is not functioning at the level they ought to for public safety.
Correct. And if it is a situation where it's a medical issue or a chemical imbalance issue, you know, biological and medically, we're talking about. There's avenues we can take if they're driving in an unsafe way, similar to if somebody was just intoxicated on alcohol. We get in contact with the DMV, have the DMV do a reevaluation on their license and whatnot. And if they're completely unable to drive, a typical one that is not too uncommon is blood sugar issues.
Diabetic.
Somebody's diabetic.
Yeah.
Forgot to dose their insulin or ran out or whatever the case may be. And we have to either call a medical team out there depending on the severity of the case. And it is a case-by-case basis, but that's a fairly common one.
So if you had somebody in that situation and you call whoever medical,
sure.
And they come out, do whatever they are so the person is righted,
mm-hmm.
Are they then okay to drive away?
Again, that would be a medical evaluation if they
pass whatever the testing is
and there are some certain tests that we can do that would be similar to field sobriety tests we do for somebody that we suspect is impaired, and you know, see if they can track with their eyes and balance and coordination is back. And in that case there's been times when yes, they've driven away from the scene.
It's kind of cool, like with the diabetic, though. I wouldn't have thought, but once they get in balance, then they
yes,
would be okay.
It's sometimes very, very interesting to see. And if you know, if you're diabetic yourself, speaking to the listening audience or family members, it can be just like a light switch coming on, regaining that the awareness and balance and everything else that can be very much impaired if you're going through a diabetic episode.
That's so, somehow that's cool. I like it. It feels nice.
Yeah, it's like the scene from Pulp Fiction with the adrenaline shot to the heart.
Oh, okay.
At 1 minute, back the next.
Now, with marijuana, is that treated as aggressively as alcohol impairment or alcohol-based impairment?
As of now, the law for driving under the influence, it is open-ended like we talked about at the beginning, in that it is an and/or alcohol and/or drugs. So a lot of times we find that it's a combination of the two. There's going to be a admission or evidence of smoking marijuana, ingesting marijuana, and then alcohol as well. Even if it's not over the hard and fast legal limit of 0.08% blood alcohol concentration, a combination of intoxicants is a lot of times what we're looking for, or what we see, I should say.
So how do you guys measure if somebody has, let's say I've got a prescription.
Sure.
And I've had a pop.
As far as marijuana or in general?
Take your pick.
Okay.
Booze or drugs, illegal. The combination kicks me into what got your attention.
Yes.
One is legal. One is not legal.
Well,
do you distinguish?
Yeah. Well, we do in this manner. Basically, to you know, put it straightforward, even if you do have a proper legal medical endorsement for marijuana, in no way does that entitle you to operate a vehicle or machinery under the influence. Exactly the same as if you were to take a legally prescribed anti-anxiety pill, sleeping pill, pain medication. A lot of those prescription bottles themselves come with a label sticker on the, a warning sticker on the label that says, do not drive or operate heavy machinery. And unfortunately, people's, whether it's judgment's impaired from the medication or busy schedule gets in the way and they chance it, we see extreme amounts of impairment on legally prescribed, valid medically prescribed drugs. And we see sometimes the impairment can be far worse than lower levels of alcohol based on just the legal prescriptions.
DayQuil, or NyQuil is the one, right, or the equivalent of that with the branding, has that warning on it also. Have you ever pulled someone over and it was over-the-counter, like NyQuil, and they had it, and then they had to run out to the store to get something, or they forgot about something else?
That is actually, believe it or not, more common than people would think, especially during this time of year, flu and cold season. You see people who are heavily dosed. They're sick anyway, so they may be weakened, woozy, loopy, whatever you want to call it. They're heavily dosed on cough medications, NyQuil, whatever you want to say, and they are going to the drugstore to get more. In fact, I investigated, I've investigated collisions in the past where that has been exactly the case based on what the individual told me.
Just a little slower reaction. And
yeah, but to kind of, again, the combination of intoxicants, a lot of people will self-medicate with these, you know, over-the-counter cough remedies. And then they will also add in the what is termed grandpa's old cough syrup, which would be the whiskey or something that they take self-medicate to help the burn.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chase Adams from the CHP. Chase, some of the different under-influence things I would think are pretty straightforward. You know, the drugs, the booze.
The booze, yes. So.
Yeah, okay, we get it. What about people who are have got those chemical situations or mental situations, bipolar?
Sure.
Do you see any changes when they're driving also if they're off meds?
Well, there can be. There can be aggression, just an overall lack of stability. And this is, like we referenced in the beginning, this is one of the things we take on a case-by-case basis. A lot of times there'll be no intoxicants aboard that will be impaired in that they're not in a safe mental mindset to be pretty much necessarily operating a machine, vehicle, whatever the case may be, something that could cause harm to themselves or others.
Is that where road rage kind of comes from?
Well, there you go. You could, how far do you stretch the argument? You know, is it a chemical imbalance or is it just somebody being a jerk? to put it yeah, plainly.
Or a combination of the above.
Yeah, and there, again, we take it on a case-by-case basis. There has been times in my career where there's been somebody who is obviously dealing with mental health issues, and we've, and not necessarily driving aggressively, that we've called a friend or caretaker and arranged for private transport of the vehicle
take care
and
the person. Situation
absolutely, and they and they're usually, and it's usually not the first time that it's happened. I've had people tell me, "Oh, I'm sorry that this has happened again," and it's the first time I dealt with the individual, but it's usually a recurring theme. And unfortunately, that's part of life and part of being out on the road.
Will you tend to find people who are impaired more in a city setting or more in the rurals?
Well, I've worked LA and I've worked Garberville and I've worked up here. And just when I think, man, it was a lot busier in the city, then I'll get a rash of a string of impaired drivers that I'll contact. So every time I try and figure it out, it throws me a curveball.
No rhyme or reason.
Yes and no. Per capita. And then you also have to factor in the per capita. You have millions and millions of people down in LA, and the amount you contact, the percentage wise, can seem higher, and it's cyclical depending what shift you're working, depending what time of the year. It seems like alcohol impairment goes up during the summer. Days are longer. People have more time after work to go out and do things in the community, whether it be barbecues or sports events. And it seems like a lot of times socially, alcohol is mixed in. So we do tend to see an increase in the summer months. But again, every time you make a hard and fast rule, society
for Christmas or New Year's, and
exactly, and society
out of the water,
society
yeah.
will tear down your theory.
Distracted driving is something we've talked about with the cell phones.
Yes,
you mentioned LA. I'm sure that there are other forms of distraction that people will lead into vehicular contact with another. Is there a seasonality to distracted drivers?
I would say it's pretty much across the board. We do see obviously increase in driving during the summer months, especially around an area like Humboldt, where there's a lot of egress of motorhomes and tourists
invasion
passing
of the tourists.
Through.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's great for. I mean, we like see the roadways filled. We like to see all the all the tourist attractions being filled and utilized, and beautiful scenery we have around here. But with that comes an increase in vehicles on the road, and then sometimes it leads to collisions and people unfamiliar with the road take a corner too fast in their 75-foot motorhome and flop it, and we react accordingly.
That would be quickly professionally and with passion for the people, right?
Oh, absolutely. And in a very safe manner.
I knew you were rounding the corners on that one just a tad.
Yeah, yeah.
So in a situation where you're in these long stretches and you see folks and you can track them visually for longer periods, is it easier to determine who's under the influence or not? Safety corridor, for example.
Okay.
Big wide view shed, you can see that. Or is it easier to tell if somebody's driving through town and takes a turn and seems a little unstable?
Both, really. If you're unable to maintain a straight line on a straight roadway, and you're weaving all over, hitting both sides of the line, in the police business, that's what we call a clue.
It's not just a game. Okay. No,
and in that situation, we mentioned obviously DUI, but in the context of distracted driving too, we'll pull somebody over thinking, okay, they're driving very bad, or they impaired, pull over and we'll see the cell phone on the seat next to them. Oh, were you texting? And I pulled you over because you're weaving badly. Have you had anything to drink? And no, officer, my kids were yelling in the back
kids
seat,
were having a fight. Yeah,
or I had to break it up, play referee on that, or I was changing the CDs or MP3 on my stereo, whatever the case may be. So distractions lead to that kind of driving as well.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
Decade of Difference presents a brand new competition, Innovate, a business challenge opportunity to pitch your creative idea. First step, upload a 60 to 90 second elevator pitch highlighting your business venture idea by March 29th. 40 finalists will be selected to move on to phase two. But don't wait. First 100 entries receive a free iTunes gift card. To upload your video and get more information, visit decadeofdifference.org. A grand prize of up to $2,500 will be awarded. Don't wait. Innovate.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with California Highway Patrol Public Information Officer Chase Adams. Chase, considering some of the different challenges that are out there with DUI, with the apprehension, and I suppose for some of us, the avoidance of detection, is booze still number one above drugs? Is road rage up in there just kind of as a natural attitude adjustment, but it's a natural rather than or self-induced rather than chemically induced?
Well, you can have, like I said, every time you think you have it figured out and you think you know what's on the uptrend or the downtrend, then you get thrown a curveball and you seem to have a swing of a variety of cases. As far as driving badly, road rage, risky behavior, that can be a combination of the driving under the influence of something. You know, you have alcohol, which is obviously a kind of a inhibition lower. It lowers your inhibitions, and you see erratic behavior, even if they're not necessarily over the legal limit on poor decisions, street racing, everything else. When
you mentioned that, I'm thinking, what about? I mean, it kind of sounds like it's a caffeine related, right? You get a little amped up.
There you go.
These sports drinks that have the equivalent of 4 or 5 hits of caffeine,
and
if you have a couple of those, and then you're going to go driving.
Well, we see that.
I would think there could be a little aggressiveness put into that equation.
It would make sense. I can't actually speak to that because I haven't seen anything where it's been traced directly back to that. But what you do see is people mixing their medications, like we talked about, self-medicating. They've had copious amounts of alcohol, which is a central nervous system.
I thought you were going to say it's a good start.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're building a foundation of weirdness,
A lot of alcohol, which is a depressant to the nervous system, and then they combat that with bunch of whatever energy drink they're drinking, and you see just erratic behavior based on that, and then again with mixing substances, you'll have somebody who's on uppers, downers, and no sleep, and distracted as well, and angry.
How about the sleeping driver? We had that one earlier this last week when I think it was CHP. It could have been a PD. Guy's just kind of sleeping in his car over the steering wheel parked.
Mm-hmm.
You go over, check it out. There's stuff inside the rig, so he's passed out rather than sleeping.
Well, our directive, what part of our main mission is to provide service as well as enforcement and protection. And if we see a vehicle stopped in an emergency parking only zone, or near the, even if it's on a highway and it's near the side of the road, obviously we're going to check and see if there's assistance needed. Vehicles broke down, out of gas, whatever the case may be. And a lot of times it is somebody taking a brief siesta,
a snoozer,
and so that to avoid the drowsy situation. But sometimes it's because they had too much alcohol and passed out, or because they're having a medical issue, or like I said, vehicle mechanical issues. So
what help could folks rely upon or anticipate from CHP if they were in vehicle stress? Do you guys drive around with a gallon container of gas in the back of the trunk, or?
Well, for basically hazmat reasons, our policy, we don't carry gasoline in our vehicles, in the cabs or trunks.
But
and we have various we have radio equipment in our trunks and everything else. We don't want any spillage or vapors even, and so we do not offer any gas system. Now in the bigger cities in LA, you get spoiled because they have the freeway service patrol, which does, they're basically tow trucks that are contracted by the state to help folks out, get them off the freeway, expedite the flow of traffic on the freeway. If somebody's broke down on their shoulder, everybody's rubbernecking. Just that can cause a major backup in rush hour.
Is that amazing?
It is. It still blows my mind.
Yeah, everybody's going really slow, and then all of a sudden, freedom, whoosh.
Yep.
And it's got, and there's nothing there.
Or in opposing direction, if there's a car broke down on the opposite side, say you're going eastbound and it's on the westbound side, eastbound traffic will start to back up because people are slowing down and looking to see what's going on over there. And it can be as simple as a car broke down on the shoulder.
That'd be a really interesting study, I think, for a lot of folks to hear the results of. What causes traffic jams, or causes traffic to unjam?
Yeah.
The few that I've been in, there's no rhyme or reason other than just total load.
Yeah. And I mean, you can have a couple of people, the majority putting the blinders on, not going to rubberneck at whatever object it is on the shoulder on the opposite side of traffic. And the two or three rubberneckers can cause everybody to tap their brakes, and that causes a chain reaction. Then you're going to have
just enough
gridlock.
Yeah. And isn't there something about gridlock being an attractant for motorcycle cops?
Well, obviously lane splitting.
Get the guys, get the patrol that's on the motorcycles zipping through to get in the middle of that stuff. Can they actually cause a traffic jam to untangle?
But well,
just presence of,
well, here's an example. And this is across the board for patrol cars or patrol motorcycles. And up here, we have EPD has a couple of patrol motorcycles, but CHP doesn't, just because inclement weather and not a ton of congestion usually.
You need training wheels.
You would need training wheels, or a roll cage on your bike.
Boy, that looked manly, wouldn't it?
Be awesome. But when we do have a situation where there may have been a fender bender on the freeway, and say second from the left out of six lane freeway, second from the left lane out of a six lane freeway, and nobody's hurt, everybody's fine. There's an exit, a quarter mile up ahead. A lot of people, just their natural reaction for whatever reason is to stay there and like I said, property damage only, minor fender bender, stay there and stage the accident so that it can be properly investigated, when in all reality it'd be much safer and much more advantageous to take the next exit, go to gas station, and if you still want to report, obviously call CHP. We'll come out there and describe the location. We can go back and check out the skid marks and physical evidence physical evidence left on scene. But people,
so that would be a better thing to do.
Oh, absolutely, to get off the freeway, because what you're doing is you're causing not only a traffic jam and locking things up on the freeway, but now you're in the backup, much higher likelihood that there's going to be more accidents, more collisions. And best thing to do is always get out of lanes, get to the safest location you can as you're making the notifications to 911 and requesting CHP or police assistance.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Chase Adams.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions, 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chase Adams. Chase, what does a DUI cost these days? Do you have any idea? And whether it's illegal or legal or erratic driving, are the values the same? Are the costs the same?
Well, in a lot of instances, they are, due to the fact that the law is the exact same section that we charge, whether it's drugs or alcohol or combination of the two, like we specified. This is the exact same vehicle code, California vehicle code statute is enforced whether it is drugs or alcohol. I did some research. AAA put out basically an overall cost list of the cost of your first DUI throughout regions. And in our region, the estimated total cost of your first DUI is somewhere in the $15,600 range. And that includes court fees, DUI class fee, impound fees, everything.
Wrap it all up.
It's going to cost you about $15,000-$16,000 for an adult over 21 who gets their first DUI. Now, combine that with second, third, and fourth habitual offenses, it goes up from there. And also under 21. For whatever reason, the courts and DMV have similar yet different processes for dealing with somebody who's under 21 or over 21, because the legal drinking age obviously is 21. And I know nobody ever drinks before they're 21, but in that rare case that somebody does, the fees are somewhat stiffer, and the process for getting your license back can be more difficult through the DMV.
For the younger drivers.
Sure.
16 to 21. Distraction?
Mm-hmm.
Impairment? Unfamiliarity? Speed? What are the things that cause them to get into accidents most regularly?
All of the above, absolutely. You do have the distractions, and there are laws on the books that we actively enforce that limit distractions. For instance, voice and texting calls, or laws for using your cell phone. Obviously, in California, as a adult, 18 or older, you are allowed to use a cell phone or text if it's done in a completely hand-free manner. And a lot of people take that to mean if they're on speakerphone, that's fine, but then they end up having their phone in their hand, and
that negates it.
A little bit unclear on the definition of hands-free. So if you're using a Bluetooth device or a speakers device where you can keep the phone out of your hands, both hands on the wheel, obviously that's within the California law. However, 18 and younger, they're not allowed in any circumstances, whether it's hand-free or not, to be on the phone. And from personal experience, I've seen young drivers texting, talking, whether it's hands-free or not, and across the board, that's against the law in California for those reasons. Inexperience, distractions, to some degree, and all those variables can lead to bad judgment, like you said. Peer pressure, other kids in the car. Obviously, when you first get your license, it's provisional. You're not allowed to have anybody under 25 in the car in certain circumstances, and that's because, believe it or not, backseat teenagers can cause front seat drivers to make bad decisions through peer pressure. I don't know if you realize that.
You mean tickling?
Tickling
while driving.
There you go. TWD.
10 years on. Well, hopefully all this stuff will be a good primer, and we can start talking about things changing a little bit.
Hopefully.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
All right. You have a great one.
Take care of your forehead.
Always.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Chase Adams. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.